Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Texas Citizens Bank is making entrepreneurship easier for Houston business owners wearing multiple hats. As one customer says, Texas Citizens Bank can do virtually everything the national guys can do, but with full bore service on a first name basis. Call 713-948-5700 today. Today on the show, we have Samantha Snaves and Charlotte Kraft of Re3D, a Houston-based startup that's making larger scale 3D printing possible. Samantha and Charlotte will share their passion for community and sustainability and how Re3D is moving the needle in both of these fields. Samantha, Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to be here.
So we're talking about Re3D and all of the goings on that you ladies and your team have been working on. But let's start with a little bit about Re3D. Samantha, tell me a little bit about the company, what you're doing, and how you founded this company.
Sure. Re3D is an open source bootstrapped social enterprise. We actually got our start in Houston almost 10 years ago as we were volunteering with Engineers Without Borders, NASA Johnson Space Center, and working as contractors for NASA. And over the couple of years that we overlapped, both professionally and as volunteers, we started to corral our friends and have a lot of conversations about what it would look like if people had the ability to manufacture and to create goods on demand with the hope of creating jobs and economic independence. Around that time, the 3D printer movement with the open source desktop 3D printers was taking off, and Matthew, my co-founder, was really enamored with it and started to share it with our friends through Engineers Without Borders. And so we started to center on this idea of like getting more people access to these open source printers. And I'd had the honor of, in parallel, ended my tenure there as a social entrepreneur in residence for NASA headquarters, and had access to groups and some of the communities we had in mind that we thought could benefit, and organizations, and started to do surveys with the communities we volunteered with through Engineers Without Borders and my friends in microfinance and through USAID. And what we learned is the things that people would make that could create independence were bigger than what we call a red box. So they were bigger than the desktop printers, and they were the size of a toilet, or even composting toilets came up as examples. Lower limb prosthetics, tools, and we call them, you know, objects at the astronaut or the human scale. So we had that requirement, and then we also had this requirement to make a system that starts at under 10,000 US, because we learned that was the purchasing threshold for a lot of credit cards. So we originally set out, and you see the legacy in our URL, re3d.org, even though we're for profit. We had set out just to design one of these systems and release it to the community. We started to share this idea in different challenges, and people were writing in and saying, hey, I could use that for my community. And lo and behold, in 2013, a program called Startup Chile offered us $40,000 to quit our jobs and to try to take this big idea on our heads and make it a reality. I quit my job first and moved to Santiago, Chile to launch the company. And we'd always had this vision to also allow the printers to print from waste. But Matthew said, I think those are two separate challenges, printing big and printing from garbage. So he said in 8 weeks, he could make a printer. He was still working part-time at NASA Johnson Space Center that was the size of a toilet and under $10,000. And he made it happen. And we got lucky that year Startup Chile had a booth at South by Southwest. So then he went to drive it down the road to Austin, Texas, while I built a Kickstarter campaign and realized it didn't fit through the door outside of his living room. So took it apart, drove it to Austin, had to reassemble it. And just in the nick of time, the doors opened to the exhibit hall, and he had it working. And an editor from TechCrunch walked by and said, 3D printing is now bigger than a bread box. And we were funded in 27 hours and raised $250,000 instantly. And over 20 plus countries, and learned very quickly that people that can use 3D printers are also MD Anderson Hospital and the Vet Teaching Hospital at Texas A&M, and organizations of all shapes and sizes, and schools, and in Houston as well. And we learned that people everywhere are problem solvers. And so we've just continued on this journey of making bigger and bigger 3D printers.
Yeah. So take me forward now to where you're at today, specifically with your technology and some of the exciting kind of accomplishments y'all have made, or I guess maybe you've just kind of enabled people to make and tell me about the Gigabot and what its capabilities are now today.
Sure. So we're now in over 50 countries around the world. It's really mind-blowing and very humbling. We consider our customers to be our micro-investors because, you know, they bring us to life. We now have a bootstrapped up to a 10,000 square foot factory across the street from JSC, where we make the printers ourselves and offer the services with a team of about 20 people that just give a lot of time and talent every day to it. And have been able to make bigger and bigger printers, including a 6 foot tall one we call Exabot. We just delivered to an Air Force base in Texas last week. Thanks to the support of maybe some very kind people who might be listening or have listened to our multiple pitch competitions, we received funding from the National Science Foundation through the SBIR program and a few grants and awards we won in Houston that have allowed us to modify our printers so they can directly print from shredded up plastic waste or pellets. So it gives you kind of like three ways to print now: filaments, pellets, or flake. And you can print from garbage or non-garbage. So we're really excited to have that out in the field. We just graduated from ION and are keen to start to explore strategic pilots and partnerships with groups thinking about closed loop economies and sustainable manufacturing.
You mentioned before about how you were originally founded to kind of focus on two different things. And so now you're really getting able to focus on the sustainability element, right? So tell me a little bit about the ION Smart Cities Accelerator and kind of what it means to have this sustainable focus in this time where it's become increasingly important to everyone to be able to have, you know, reusable materials.
Yeah, we were really stoked to see the Smart Cities Accelerator stand up in Houston. This is actually my second venture that I've had in Texas, and I had a life science company during the last recession. And, you know, there wasn't as many resources around startups and to support the community. And Houston, as we know, is so spread out. You know, there just hasn't kind of been a good landing page to bring everyone together and to advocate for small businesses. So I think ION really fills that gap. So we were, one, just thrilled to see such an organization exist. And then it was completely in line with what we're doing and our vision to not only print from garbage, but to think about more sustainable manufacturing and new job creation and creating more manufacturing jobs and more startups and more businesses and in a city that, you know, we really love. So it's been a real honor. It's kind of interesting timing because during our participations when the Climate Action Plan was released for Houston. And it seems like, you know, that the city is definitely making it a priority. The infrastructure is now established in Houston to help support partnerships with, you know, big organizations or academia and smaller companies like ourselves as we think about a greener city.
Yeah, and I think the vibe of Free3D is so collaborative and so much, so community is such a focus, and we're going to talk more about that. But one thing that has kind of been this pandemic is Free3D, y'all have emerged kind of as a great tool for creating PPE. And so Charlotte, I want to ask you about that and kind of what it meant to be able to create PPE for the people and work with, you know, local community members to do that. So tell me a little bit about PPE for the people and what all that meant for y'all.
Great. Yeah. I'm going to back up just a little bit. So in March, when, you know, the pandemic kind of went full throttle, it, just like you said, 3D printing kind of emerged as a potential tool for stopping the bottlenecks that were happening because of a lack of access to the supply chain, because the supply chain was completely disrupted. People couldn't get their PPE and, you know, people were really suffering. So a lot of groups, not just us, I mean, this wasn't an idea that, you know, germinated in a bottle, kind of formed ad hoc community networks that formed globally. So one of the first ones that started up was called open source COVID-19 medical supplies, and they're still running strong. They've actually turned into a nonprofit now. And also Helpful Engineering was another group. It's just like a huge group of people who wanted to use 3D printing to help solve these challenges specifically for the medical community. But then it, you know, kind of grew out. So we joined up at the very beginning and connected with TXRX, which was, you know, designing and printing face shields for local hospitals, and connected with a whole bunch of people there and started making face shields like out the wazoo. And we're really grateful to like meet a lot of makers in the Houston community who were really passionate about trying to help solve this problem for everybody. But as the pandemic continued, the data was emerging that people of color in Black and Brown communities and underserved communities were at greater risk of critical illness from COVID-19. The CDC was delivering stats that, you know, like the risk rate was like 2 times larger for death for people who were Black. And we felt like the healthcare community, like the supply chain for the healthcare community was kind of picking up and reconnecting being able to meet the demand. So we wanted to specifically target, you know, people who were working but were of color and disadvantaged because especially Texas was opening back up its doors, but, you know, nobody had any extra money at that point to put towards buying PPE to protect their staff or protect their customers. So we connected with Impact Hub Houston, and Grace Rodriguez and Samantha and I had a great talk where we kind of talked through this idea we had about, like, you know, making PPE for essential workers, not just healthcare. And Grace gave us some great leadership, and we kind of formulated this program that we called PPE for the People. And what it does is we donate 3D printed, not all of it's 3D printed actually, but mostly 3D printed PPE to businesses and organizations in underserved community and minority communities in the Houston area. And we have a website that's hosted by Impact Hub Houston where people can both go in and request PPE donations or give money to support the cause or sign up to be a partner and actually make the PPE. Mm-hmm. So we have all of those options through the group. And so we started this program and, very quickly maxed out the donations that we had received because the need was so great. So Samantha and I went looking for grant opportunities specifically to support PPE for the People. And thankfully, we were connected through our previous relationship with the Unreasonable Impact Group to a grant opportunity they were giving for people who were doing very similar things, not 3D printing, but, you know, serving their communities during the pandemic. And we were lucky to have received a grant from them that is just going public now and are able to restart production on the PPE. And I have reached out to community members all over the place, schools, people who host food pantries, people who do healthcare outreach, even small places like small barber shops and vet hospitals and eye care centers, dentists, like all of these organizations and businesses that are trying to open and keep running and keep their people safe and keep their customers safe as the pandemic keeps going. It's becoming this long haul journey, and we're really grateful to Unreasonable and Barclays for funding the continuation of this program and mm-hmm. making it possible that we can expand it beyond Houston to anywhere that needs it.
I think it's so interesting because I think of, you know, this pandemic and in the phases of what was going on and what I was covering, right? And so one of the first phases was this PPE development phase, and it was this challenge that everyone was trying to overcome and how to create these PPE materials so quickly. And so, yeah, it was really cool to see, though, this was, you know, the PPE for the People was the first kind of rush to create PPE non-healthcare people. And so I loved that it was donation-based. It was the first that I had ever come across, like, just in reading about. So it was really cool to see that. So
What's the impact now? And you mentioned kind of getting back to being able to produce more, but what's the impact y'all saw? I know it was delivering that sometimes probably firsthand delivery to some of those. What difference did that really make to people? What were you able to observe?
Well, I actually was lucky enough to do a lot of the deliveries myself. And one of the first places I went was actually a cosmetology school. Okay. And you think about how much time a person sits in close proximity to someone while they're getting their hair done or getting their nails done or getting a dye job, you know. And the cosmetology school needed 150 face shields for their students who were continuing to help, like, serve their community. And you know, just, like, the excitement on their faces when they knew that they were going to be able to, like, wear these sweet, ridiculous face shields and stay protected was really fantastic. And when I made that delivery, but you know, it's a gift that keeps giving, being able to give back to this community that's given us so much and provided for us as we develop this this brand new technology, just being able to help continue to sustain this and prove, you know, the best part about it is it's proven the theory, right? Mm-hmm. The theory is that if you give people a tool to make whatever they need, when even if it hasn't been invented yet, the tool will provide them the means and they will make it and they will use it to serve the people in their community. And that's exactly what happened with this PPE made by 3D printing. And it happened not just here in Houston, it happened all over the world. You know, we did a feature where we polled our customers to see who was doing similar things. And we had this massive response. And we just set up a feature on our website just chronicling what everyone was working on and how they were impacting the community and who it was for. And there were people making PPE for nursing homes and for hospitals and for all sorts of things. You know, we're really happy and proud to be a part of this network and lucky that we're able to still keep it going.
That's interesting. I didn't know that y'all had that kind of access to your customers to really see what they're doing. When you polled them, what did you find, anything that was really surprising to you that came from that?
You know, I want to say it wasn't so much surprising as just like completely just like inspiring. It wasn't surprising so much as inspiring because we knew we were doing this and we knew that the people who bought Gigabots bought them because not just because they were a good 3D printer, they bought them because they loved our mission and they loved that we give back. So we were, you know, we knew that the people who were in the community of Gigabot users were already kind of tied into social work. And just like every single response just renewed our faith that the, you know, that efforts that we're going through, the hardship of going through the pandemic and the uncertainty of that, were all worth it because we were enabling local communities to serve their people.
That's great. I know, and obviously anyone listening to this can tell immediately that Re3D is very community driven. And so I wonder, you know, among the other challenges you're probably facing in a global pandemic, how has that affected, you know, your mission to be so community focused and collaborative?
You know, I think it's just brought it more to the forefront. Mm-hmm. You know, we, like many other businesses, suffered a drop in sales because basically the economy shut down. But Samantha and Matthew, you know, took a decision to not, I mean, my position exists because of this community focus, but they took a decision that even though I wasn't going to be able to be giving tours and going to the schools and community groups and talking about 3D printing, like to keep me around and let me take hold of this pandemic response and run with it. And it, you know, it made the impact of our work so much more tangible and so much more real.
Samantha, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about pandemic pivots in the small business space and the startup space. But I think for us, one thing that we've been fortunate to do is because we're, you know, we don't use resellers, we sell directly to our customers and have a really high touch with them. We're in that relationship, we're kind of always sensing and always learning, especially in a field where, as people are quick to point out, 3D printing is changing all the time and materials and this garbage conversation is endless. So for us, yeah, it was really humbling to see our customers were sharing on social media, like what they were doing, you know, in every continent, but Antarctica. And while we made big 3D printers because we wanted to make like large things affordably, the other interesting advantage of our platform that sometimes gets overlooked is you can print a lot of little things. And when you're typically 3D printing, you make one thing and then you have to wait for it to get done and then you start something else. But with our platform, you could do more PPE at one time so you didn't have to babysit it. And with it being a lower cost platform, it really cut down on the cost in addition to the labor. So it was kind of cool to be like, whoa, we made this, but like we didn't design Gigabyte around the requirement to be able to print, you know, like 50 ear guards or comfort straps at a time or, you know, 10 face shields. But it was really remarkable just to see that, you know, it had this upside in a time of such great need that was so human and so shared around the world. So that was cool. And then we've had this, you know, vision for a long time for the Gigabus. And in fact, in our Austin office, I've had a picture because I'm from Detroit and I know the people that built the cars, but a picture of like the Ford factory line and like the Ford Transit Connect. I'm like, someday we're going to have like a mobile way of doing instruction and to communities that are, you know, unreached, they could benefit from trade skills. And we apply for contests all the time, have yet to win one. But if someone would like to donate a Gigabus, you really want one. But kind of in line with the pandemic, you know, some in thinking through PPE production, we also realized that there were a lot of people that were making PPE and using that as a way to learn how to print. And so it's project-based learning, which is something I'm personally like really excited about. And so we realized, you know, because of this great need, we were enabling a way for people to learn this, how to use this tool with their hands. And they were really motivated. And so we already offer big printers and obviously they're doing PPE and we have some fluency in that now. And then we offer the services. So there were some federal grants and we came up with this idea called the Giga Lab, which we've since trademarked. And it's a shipping container outfitted with power. We've talked to a bunch of vendors in the Houston area that are familiar with the requirements and how to do this. And we basically would just fill up with all the supplies to make PPE and printers. But really what you're providing is this like flexible way to do manufacturing or to teach 3D printing on demand. And so that's, we continue to pitch that if someone's listening and they're curious about it. We'd love your feedback, but it's gotten a really good response. No one's bought one yet. But we do have a couple federal contracts that are now open to any agency to buy it. And that's part of what Charlotte's gonna be working on. But I think, you know, for us, it isn't so much a pivot because it kind of just leverages everything we already do. But in that community engagement, you know, despite making big printers for 7 years and services, it hadn't occurred to us to have a Giga Lab before. We were just really fixated on the Gigabus. Mm-hmm. and so there's some beauty in like just stepping back and kind of seeing shared trends and working with the community to find maybe a better way to provide your product or service.
That's so cool. I love everything on this like Giga brand, right? Giga everything. You're going to have a Giga moped or something. I don't know.
We still do want a Giga bus, though.
I know that.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely, we do.
I think kind of at the core, though, is just how, you know, the future of the industry of 3D printing. So I feel like y'all are, you know, among the companies that are really at the forefront of that. So where, I wonder, just to pick your brains and put you totally on the spot, but where is, you know, the future of 3D printing going and where do you see this? Obviously it's relatively recent kind of emergence as this thing that people are obsessed with and that's providing all of these alternatives to produce products. But in the next 10, 15, 20 years, where do you see that industry?
Yeah, a lot of adoption is, you know, the materials are improving every day and as we speak. And then when you think about printing from shredded, you know, potentially like waste, whether it's manufacturing waste in a factory and would otherwise be in a Houston landfill, and giving it a home internally, to thinking about more consumer waste. You know, there's just like endless potential there, but the industry is sometimes somewhat beholden to making sure that there are the materials are in a format that the printers can take. And what that hints at is standard. So, you know, like a really interesting market is construction, but you know, whether it's automotive or defense or aerospace or space, which obviously we cater to quite a bit, being a massive spinoff, or adjacent industries like healthcare or construction, you know, there are standards that you have to meet, and oftentimes they relate to testing that is done on the materials and the efficacy. And those, you know, traditionally that takes a lot of lobbyists, a lot of lobbying and big money from big brands to shape standards that, you know, take time. So I think someone made the comment recently from another printing company, and I think there's some truth to it, in that like defense begets standardization and compliance and regulation that supports new technologies in aerospace, and aerospace opens up automotive, and automotive opens up, you know, maybe oil and gas or other applications, and it kind of like falls out that way. I think a lot of traction has been made in those fields, and especially healthcare, in the last few years. So I think there'll be more and more standards around the acceptance of 3D printed goods. And, you know, PPE has been a great way to get a lot of clinicians now thinking about 3D prints and sterilization and topics that, relate to using additive manufacturing. So I think there'll be a lot of like the boring, non-sexy case studies on, you know, compliance and regulation, and then new materials development. But one thing that is really interesting about the pandemic, particularly in the US, is we've, you know, sometimes struggled with getting as much support in the US as we get overseas around the topic of sustainability. And also even around manufacturing in-house, because it's more common to outsource. And teaching manufacturing and education, because it's just, those are skill sets that were less needed as the US was advancing with other forms of technology. And suddenly with COVID, like supply chains are completely disrupted, and Americans suddenly realize there's a huge sense of urgency to get tech trades back into schools, to figure out how to do it regardless of COVID, to bring more manufacturing back into the States. And so I think we're going to see an explosion, because platforms like ours can support that dialogue, as well as many other tools around like centers of excellence and thinking through, you know, curriculum, how you're going to teach trade skills, you know, during a pandemic, and just adoption by organizations that were kind of maybe traditionally waiting for, you know, all the infrastructure to be stood up to really incentivize the use of 3D printers. And so if I was a betting man, I'd say, you know, give it like maybe 2 years. And I think there's just going to be an explosion beyond just libraries and schools.
Yeah. Charlotte, do you have anything to add on that, kind of where you see the industry going?
Yeah. Beyond what Samantha's touched on, the thing, I mean, really the reason that I decided to join up with Re3D was this idea of bringing recycling to the masses in a tangible way. You know, a lot of our recycling programs are kind of just put your recycling in a bin and it disappears and you don't ever have to think about it again. And I think that is a disservice to the realities of what recycling is and what it isn't. And it kind of creates this fictional picture that like, I've recycled my stuff, so therefore the environment's good, you know, when the reality is a lot of that waste ends up going and sitting in a warehouse somewhere and not actually getting used, or potentially not actually sitting in a warehouse and going through, you know, some sort of natural disaster. And then all of that waste is spewed everywhere in the oceans. Right. Mm-hmm. But if we use the Gigabot X platform to, you know, kind of help bring it to the forefront of people's minds, to help them understand like the processes behind it, then we can become as a society a lot smarter about recycling, a lot smarter about the circular economy, a lot smarter about what we do with that piece of plastic that we buy for 99 cents and it ends up, you know, filling up a landfill. And that's the part that really excites me, because we're moving this technology out from hidden in the shadows across the ocean and, you know, into people's businesses, into people's schools, into people's worldview.
Yeah. I think that's such an important part to realize about Re3D is y'all aren't just making these 3D printers. It's you're doing so much more. And so that's fascinating to me. It's so fascinating. It's so helpful that y'all are one of the top destinations for TripAdvisor. I don't know if I have that terminology right, but people coming obviously pre-pandemic to y'all as a tourism destination, which I think is so cool. And I wonder, you know, how did that come about? What does that really mean to y'all?
Yeah. So my background, just a little bit of background, my background is in the performing arts, and which is a totally bizarre way to end up in 3D printing, but it works really well because like Samantha and Matthew's vision was to like have our factory be as cool as like going and visiting St. Arnold, right? Like going and taking a brewery tour and like having our factory be that cool. Be that place that people would want to just like be like, oh, I'm going to stop by this place and have a tour of a 3D printer factory. And so what we did is we just kind of, we kept an open factory, you know, ideal, you know, anyone who walks in, if they're interested, even the UPS drivers who drop off all our deliveries all the time, like, are like sometimes peeking the door and they're like, what's going on in there? And we'll like give them a tour of everything that's going on in the factory. You can come in and you can see giant rockets being printed or full scale human scale mannequins, or you can come in and see the trash furniture that we made with Habitat for Humanity. You know, we have all this kind of crazy projects going on all the time. And so the idea was like, why don't we just throw this up on TripAdvisor and see if people were interested. And I actually kind of like did a little cheatery by like tagging us near as like a NASA, you know, site on the way to NASA. So people who were planning a trip to NASA, like they would on TripAdvisor kind of get a pop-up like, hey, you could also go tour this factory and you'll get a rocket. So that's what he did. And then, you know, just kind of pre-pandemic kind of like blasted up the TripAdvisor listing page. I feel like, to be real honest, I don't think we're like the top TripAdvisor listing, but like we're like the top tour in Houston, educational tour in Houston listing was where we were. So not like all of TripAdvisor, but
it's like you go to St. Arnold's and you go to the 3D printing.
Exactly. So Nerd TripAdvisor is where it's at, is my point. And the cool thing about that is like people from who are just like, you know, you come to Houston and you think NASA, so you want to go to NASA, and then they end up finding us that way and end up coming in and then having this really cool intimate experience where they get to like wander around a factory and learn about 3D printers. And, you know, we've had little kids, like 5-year-olds, come in on tours through TripAdvisors, and then tourists from Japan and Germany who are just coming in town. And
senior living centers.
Yeah.
I think that's so smart and so fascinating because, you know, I'm born and raised Houstonian. So I feel like, you know, there's maybe this is just my prejudice having lived here my whole life, but I feel like there's not a lot of tourist attractions, at least not ones that are really publicly out there. And on top of that, you know, you mentioned St. Arnold's and like a brewery tour and comparing it to that. Well, there's a lot of breweries. I'm willing to bet you're the only 3D printer factory you could tour. So you've got a hold on the market there. And yeah, it's genius to pair up kind of, hey, we're by NASA, because if you go to NASA and you do the Space Center Houston tour, you know, it's not going to be a full day and then you just have to drive back in traffic, or you can pop on over and do something else really cool. So the genius, like hats off to y'all for that and for creating that, Charlotte.
And I like to say we, but it's really Charlotte. Charlotte is in the process right now of adjusting to a virtual tour format. So that's once a month, and I'll let her fill in the details. So if anyone's listening, they can join the next one.
Yeah. So we have a once a month public virtual tour right now. So the next one is Monday, October 19th at 10 a.m. And you can sign up on our website, re3d.org/community. I think that's where we stuck it. But now we have a page with a calendar on it that you can use to sign up. And it's a virtual tour that you can just have some coffee and learn about 3D printing with trash.
Yeah, that's so cool. So congrats on being a top tour, educational tour destination, can't miss thing on TripAdvisor. I'm just calling it that myself. But I other congrats are in order since y'all are just constantly moving and shaking and winning things. So I want to talk a little bit about what some of those means just to kind of wrap up our conversation today. So Texas Business Hall of Fame recognized y'all this year, which is so cool. I know y'all are really excited about that. But another big thing is the Consumer Technology Association named the Gigabot, I believe the Gigabot specifically, or maybe Re3D in general, product of the year. So what do those recognitions really mean to y'all? And for me, it seems like people, you know, you're getting this more widespread attention now, right?
Yeah. So the CTA award really took us by surprise. They, some people might be familiar with the awards that they provide products during CES that get acknowledged once a year. And Parallel, turns out they also have their own Hall of Fame. And then in addition to inducting people into the Consumer Technology Association Hall of Fame, they have an Innovator of the Year and a Company of the Year, and I'm forgetting the third one right now. I think there's two different sizes: Small Business of the Year or Startup of the Year. And and we were stunned to be the Company of the Year going into this next year. So that's been really amazing. I'm told that, we'll have to fact check this, I think they'll be putting out some promotional material soon, that there's two panels that kind of weave through all of the companies that are nominated, and somehow they de-conflict, and they look at different aspects of the business. So beyond just, you know, the product, you know, the team, and just, you know, the financials, as well as the mission and ethos. And it's just been really humbling to hear that, you know, we align with the metrics that they had. And also it's exciting to think that, you know, Consumer Technology Association is a pretty big organization, that those are tenants that they see as representative of the consumer technology market. So I'm really excited to be part of that community and to meet, you know, the other innovators that are being highlighted later this year. And more importantly, I think it's cool because we often hear in the startup side of things that there's always a lot of representation from California or Massachusetts or New York, but less so, you know, right now from like Texas or other states like, you know, Mississippi or Alabama. So to be represented and acknowledged as a Houston-based company, as the Company of the Year out of, you know, so many amazing brands and organizations out there, I think is super, super cool to us, because we take a lot of pride in having a factory in Houston and hopefully encouraging other companies to grow with the community as we have here.
Definitely. How has, you know, I know you have a presence elsewhere, but how has being based in Houston and being founded in Houston been for y'all? And what is it, how do you feel about the growing Houston innovation ecosystem kind of growing right along with y'all?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I thought it was easy, especially like pre-pandemic, you know, because there is a lot of weight on like aerospace or bigger businesses or oil and gas. So I think Re3D does well sometimes when we're a bigger fish in a smaller pond. And when we're a very small fish in a very big pond, you know, sometimes it can seem daunting as to how you get yourself out there. But we shamelessly leverage pretty much any program, the resource and our networks to try to gain access and to potential customers and partners, as well as you know, resources to share our story, like with y'all. And one Bunker Labs has been, you know, established for a while now, as well as all the amazing organizations that Kevin Doffing and Anthony DeToto have really championed in the city. For a vet-led startup, so that's been amazing. We did Mass Challenge Austin And it's been great. We were part of like helping part of the soft launch in Houston and getting the word out. And now with Greentown, we're not members, but spoke on one of their panels during the pandemic, and I've had a really high touch with Jason and just recently graduated from ION. So we're keen to, you know, engage with any of the many resources that are standing up in the city, you know, the Canon and Capital Factory as they moved over, and to show our support to them, because I think it is important. And really optimistic with just because Houston has so many resources and it's a port town. Like, I just think there are so many markets that wouldn't flourish in other communities just because of geography or the types of industries that are already there. And I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Well, I'm excited to see where y'all go too, because I think, you know, I picture everything we've talked about is this really, you know, this web of things that y'all have created and are continuing to create. So it's really exciting to see all these different, I don't even know how y'all juggle all this and these different kind of parts of the company. So very impressive, very cool to see where all this goes. And I think the message to listeners today would be to sign up for a virtual tour and then eventually an in-person tour, one of those returns. And there's volunteer options as well. And it's really cool to see everything we're doing. So thank you so much for joining and sharing all about this. Hope you get your Gigabus soon. Posted on that.
Thank you so much, Natalie, for having us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Houston Innovators Podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, and keep up with all things Houston innovation at innovationmap.com.